are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
And you are indeed, and on a very, very warm day in
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I'm hot.
Well, that's a matter of opinion.
And I don't mean in the biblical sense. I mean temperature-wise. It's warm.
It's like 100, right?
It's over 100.
You think?
And I live in Tarzana, which is actually Spanish for surface of the sun,
oh,
which a lot of people don't know. Yes. It's hot.
And also the original site of the Tarzan movies, as you...
No, it's not the site of the Tarzan movies. Edgar Rice Burroughs, who wrote the Tarzan books, that was his ranch. He bought that property,
Okay.
And then he willed it to the city.
Oh, I knew there was some sort of Tarzan connection.
There's a Tarzan. There's an actual Tarzan link. Yes, yes. It's magical, isn't it?
Exciting.
And now back to the show.
Okay.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listening sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
LA Weekly says, Dirty Laundry Lit is more like a raucous party than a literary reading, and I can attest to that myself because I was at one. Founded in 2011 and dedicated to producing stimulating literary readings and showcasing emerging and established writers from around the country, Dirty Laundry Lit's mission is to promote reading. Their sponsors including Penn Center USA, Writ Large Press, and Writ Large Press. Today we'll hear about their upcoming event, Bondage. In a few moments, the host of the show, Jeff Ayers, he's going to join us via telephone, but in studio with us today, please welcome the creator and the founder of Dirty Laundry Lit, Natasha Dionne.
Oh, Natasha.
who I called Natasha Leon the first time I read
yes,
you on the air,
did.
Didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
And it was still,
I've been called a lot worse.
Okay. Nice to have you, Natasha. Nice to have you with us. We'll chat with her in just 1 second.
Into the Woods, the smash Tony Award-winning Broadway hit with a score by Stephen Sondheim and book by James Lapine, completes its run this weekend at Fullerton's Plumbers Auditorium, yet another spectacular theatrical event produced by 3D Theatricals. Audiences of all ages delight in this irreverent and deliciously witty reimagining of some of our most treasured fairy tales. Joining us today is one of the stars of that production, portraying the plum role of the baker's wife. We are delighted to welcome the lovely and talented Viva Cara.
Viva!
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 Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having
so
me.
Nice to have both of you join us. We're very, very grateful for you fitting us into your schedules. Both.
Absolutely. So before we get to these beautiful people, mm-hmm. and before we get to our first guest on the telephone there, Paul, how was your week?
My week was good, aside from the fact that getting out of Chicago was a busman's tour of hell.
I couldn't get
out of Chicago to save my young life. But before that, it was wonderful. We went to, I wrote this film called The Beating, and it's been added to the curriculum at Columbia College for their course on short filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
They used our script as a template, and so the students do all manner of pre-production of casting, and they write their budgets and they scout their locations, and it ends with what would be the first day of shooting. So the professor had me come out, and we and Cyrus Miracor, the director, was supposed to come with us, but he's bastard's getting married in India.
Selfish
man.
Yeah, really.
He couldn't make it, but I was able to speak to the students, and it was phenomenal just to be sitting in front of 30 students who know your own script better than you do because they're getting graded on it. But they were wonderful, incredibly talented people and fascinating ideas and a great forum of conversation. 2.5 hours we spoke. It was not a formal lecture. It was a Q&A type thing. But it was wonderful. And shout out to Tara Lonzo, the very professor I am talking about, who organized the whole thing. Very, very grateful.
What a very nice compliment to the work that you did in that
wonderful film.
Yeah,
it is. It is. And other great things have happened with the film, too. But this was especially... humbling and wonderful because it's you don't get this at just a screening. You know, the depth of discussion that happened here. So it was great.
So would you have entrusted these young people that you were speaking to that had gone through this course based on your film, would you have entrusted them to making the film?
Oh, well, you know, my biggest worry was that they wouldn't like the real thing when they saw it, because right. they had, you know, one romanticizes their own thing, and they cast it off of IMDb with celebrities and all this. And the fact that they loved our actual film, given the fact that they had, you know, romanticized their own, was the best compliment I could have been. And, you know, I couldn't tell enough from them, having only 2.5 hours and, you know, 20 plus students there. But it was they sure seemed like they knew their game.
That's so cool.
And you were cool. Very, very active. How many shows? Four shows?
Four. Yeah. Jeez.
Four shows.
Oh, my gosh. This past week, and I'm going to start this very, very quickly here because they were very fun and distinctly different. There's a famous restaurant here, Paul, in Los Angeles, in Silver Lake, called Casita del Campo.
Yeah.
And downstairs in the subterranean level is a club called the Cavern Club Celebrity Theater. And it is nothing like it sounds, but it's been around for years, and it's run by a very, very wonderful guy who's got a wonderful sense of humor. He's a great host. And they always put unusual things in that space. And what is currently there, what I went to the opening, is a show that is a parody of all of the slasher movies. You know, those horrible films that were so horrible, they were so good, you know, right?
Right.
And this show is called I Totally Know What You Did Last Donna Summer.
Yeah.
And it stars Libby Baker, Sidney Blair, Frances Chenning, Joe Donahoe, Drew Droege, Matt Herman, Amy Procacci, Eric Scott, Romney, and Mark Rowe, directed by Dane Whitlock, who is also the writer, along with Amy Procacci, and choreography by Joseph Carella. What an amazing experience this was. This was high camp comedy that was just rapid fire. One-liner jokes after another, and then suddenly a big production number to one of Donna Summer's songs. Not pulled out of, you know, from
that's
nothing.
Hysterical.
It was connected to this script.
Right, thematically linked, yeah.
Exactly. And it was, it's a very small space. So if it seats 60, 70, maybe that's tops. So they're right there on top of you, you know, performing. And these kids were just a bundle of energy and knew how to do this, you know, fast paced, much like Sea Glass Theater when you guys do your comedy work there. And it's just, it works so, so very well. And it was just kind of, you're sweating by the end of the evening because you are just in, you can't laugh anymore.
Right,
you
know? right.
It's taking it all out of you. But it's a great night out. The food there at the actual restaurant is pretty cool too, and it's a very busy and very hip, cool, trendy place to go. So simply go to on the Facebook. You can get tickets by going to I Totally Know What You Did Last Summer, Last Donna Summer on Facebook, and you can follow them on Twitter at ITWKYDLDS, but I'd probably go to the Facebook page for that. So definitely see it. It's in town for a couple of weeks, and it's a great date night out, I think.
Oh, that sounds
anybody
hysterical.
Will get it. You don't have to see the slasher movies to get it.
Oh, no.
Right?
Because it doesn't hinge on that, yeah.
And the other fabulous thing that I did was an evening with Miss Lily Tomlin at the beautiful...
Personally, or...?
I should be so lucky. At the beautiful Valley Performing Arts Center, which, you know, is one of our newest venues in Los Angeles. And,
have either of you been there?
Not yet. No.
It's unbelievable. It's like a mini Disney concert hall in the Valley.
Yeah.
It's
unbelievable.
Spectacular. And 140 million or something?
144 million, I think, yeah. And impeccable sound. Yeah. Just amazing. And, you know, Lily was everything and anything that you could have possibly imagined that she would bring to a stage in a concert situation, where she's just depending on her humor and her storytelling and then going back to all of those great characters that she created on Laugh-In and Ernestine and the little child, I forget.
Oh, Edith Ann.
Edith Ann, yes.
And that's the truth?
And that's the truth. And and telling how those things evolved, and there was wonderful clips of her, and she just...
Does she do anything from Signs of Intelligent Life from the universe?
Yes, she did.
Okay.
And she just had the audience eating out of the palm of her hand for 90 minutes, just straight through, never a dull moment. Yeah. And she's really a master at all of that. So the Valley Performing Arts Center, though, does have such a fabulous lineup of all very diversified entertainment, from dance to, you know, symphonies to ballet to you name it. It's all out there. Go on their website, valleyperformingartcenter.org, and it is on campus at the Northridge, Cal State Northridge.
I know. That's why one of the reasons I have a special affection for that place, because I get on Reseda and I drive north, and in 8 minutes I'm there. And I get to pass the greatest Vietnamese pho. Is it pho or pho? I don't know how you say
pho.
It.
Soup. F-A-U-S.
Pho.
Pho?
Yeah, it's pho.
Pho?
Is it pho?
I
thought you said it.
I don't know.
Because they're like, pho.
Let's call the whole thing off. But anyway, I pass it on the way up, and eat, you know, you can, Monica and I eat, like, you know, unbelievably, and you can't break $25.
Oh wow, that's fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So
yeah.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for sharing.
You're
that.
Welcome.
Dirty Laundry Lit's upcoming event, Bondage, will be interpreted by the readers, writers, to mean anything from physical and mental bondage to situational bondage and more. The kind of bondage we choose, the bondage we want to be free from. Proceeds from this event will go to the Center for Pacific Asian Families, which is an organization that fights sexual assault, domestic violence, and sex trafficking. Our first guest is a Los Angeles attorney, the creator of Dirty Laundry Lit, and was named as one of 2013's most fascinating people by LA Weekly, and we can certainly agree that she is fascinating, having had her on the show once before.
Aww.
She is a Pushcart Prize nominee, a Penn Center USA Emerging Voices Fellow. Please welcome Natasha Dion.
Hey.
Yes.
Hey.
Hang on. Wait a minute. There we go.
Dang it.
That was because we may speak to Jeff Ayers a little later. We will speak to Jeff Ayers a little later, and I had to throw a little Who in there for Jeff.
Okay.
It's Jeff's favorite.
All right.
Band. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here.
So now, arriving at the themes of these things, is that just you? Is that based on what you, like, do you see material first and then think of the theme? Do you throw the theme out there for the writers? How does that formative process work?
Yeah, you know, sometimes they just come to me, like whether it was clothing optional or bondage. And for this one, I was just thinking, I had a friend who was actually into bondage, but I was thinking about the word bondage and, you know, the things that bind us, whether it's, you know, marriage or children or, you know, just bondage is so broad, you
right.
know, and what that means. And at the time, I had this Star Trek collection, and I was like, I can't tell anybody about my Star Trek collection. I was like, I'm so bound to this to this life. No, I don't know. You know, just bondage, it just applies to so many different things. So I just thought it was appropriate and something that readers could really go for.
You know, it was fascinating for me when I was there, because the themes, the titles, of course, are wonderfully provocative. But then you get there, and there's certainly is a provocative nature to a lot of what happens, but some of the things are just so just, I mean, only tangentially related. The spectrum of content that's presented is really, really staggering. And the response is, one almost doesn't like to describe it as a reading, because it's about as far from a poetry reading as you could get, and something that's still, you know, a reading. I mean,
right,
how do you describe
right.
it to people? Is it, I mean, is there a way to describe it?
You know, it's hard to describe it, because it doesn't feel like your traditional, you know, reading at a bookstore or something
no.
like that. It's supposed to feel like a party, so it could be more inclusive. Our goal was really to bring in as many people as possible to enjoy literature and reading and want to read.
Right.
And, you know, it's like literature so insulary. So I wanted to make it, you know, so that people of diverse backgrounds could come in and hear their voice on our stage. If not this time, maybe next time.
Right.
So we have a lot of diversity, not just like racial diversity, but diversity in age and sexuality, gender, whatever. You know, we wanted to show sort of a spectrum, to show that everybody's voice needs to be out there
right,
and
right.
is welcomed. Yeah.
And it's the other thing that's so interesting about it is, because you do have this vibe, you do have this energy, and yet it is so raucous. But when they speak or when they read, I haven't been to any theatrical event in recent memory where the audience is so rapt. I mean, they are complete. It's like silent. And then, you know, the of course, the natural reactions that one has from either something funny or moving or anything. But you feel that love of words in the room. It's just like it's in the air.
Yeah, and I love that.
Yeah. And what has it been? This is 13.
This is like the 13th one.
How many do you do in a year?
We try to do them quarterly, so every 4 months or so. Okay. We were just in Seattle for a writers' conference called AWP. We had great writers there, and now we're back in L.A. So that was the first time we were, like, on the road. So now we're home.
Really? So you did a version of this on the road?
Yeah. Yes, it was. And it's, you know, it's a party. It feels good.
Well,
it feels
good. One of the reasons it's a party is because of the host who drives the train energy-wise is Jeff Ayers, who wasn't able to join us in studio today. But he is going to join us on the phone. And having Jeff up there, boy, that's just like the punk rock ringmaster of the ages.
Yes.
It was just like,
anything have to do with actually, like, your friend who was into bondage? Any of this... that occur in this?
See, I don't even know what the readers are going to read. So they get. So what I do is I give them a theme.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to read before.
Issue.
It's a trust. But they're writers who I admire their work already or their performance style because they send us something and I'm like, okay, I like this style. But they can take that theme and go anywhere they want to. So somebody might be spot on and talk about bondage. We've had readers read about bondage because we have a lot of material from... Mm. bondage to, you know, a love of Cheetos or whatever, you know, but you have all sorts of things that, and they can read whatever they want to. They have like 5 minutes and go, and it's usually amazing.
Oh, no. Yeah.
It will be amazing because I know these writers. It's one of my favorite.
And it will be amazing because in addition to the writers and the wonderful readers, we also have the host who is on the electric telephone with us now. Yay. Mr. Ayers, have you joined us?
I have, as a matter of fact. Hey, guys.
Hey,
Jeff. First time listener.
So, okay, Jeff, is this for you? How many of these Dirty Laundry Lit things have you done?
I think, I was unable to make the one up in Seattle, and I think there was another one at a street fair. So if it's been 13, I think I've done 11 of them.
Yep.
Okay. Oh,
that's
okay.
Right.
And what keeps you coming back? It's a unique perspective you have up there, Jeff, because you're looking out over the audience. What is it that fills your heart about this particular performance?
I kind of think of it as a startling act of humanity, and I often riff on this on stage, but we're also hyper-connected technologically and yet not connected as humans. And I've often put it this way on stage, that we're forced to sort of engage in our most primitive ritual, which is to gather together and tell our stories. So it keeps me feeling like a human. So I'm there for the readers. I'm there for the writers, I'm there for the sense of feeling human again, but a big part of it also, and I wanted to bring this back to what you were asking Natasha a minute ago about the name of the thing, is there's this idea our friend and professor Emily Rapp has talked about, something called nomenclatural destiny or nominative determinism, which is just the fancy way of saying what you name something sets its fate.
Right.
And the first, like, thunderbolt of genius that Natasha dropped on this was the name Dirty Laundry Lit. The audience got it right away. I got it right away. The readers got it right away. And the name she picks for the shows. So that's another thing that keeps me coming back, is just, what is Natasha going to do with this next time?
I can't recommend this high enough, really. And it's not only your awareness, Jeff, but it's also the fact that you are heroically funny. And that is one of the great things about having Jeff there and just sort of being that conduit from... Because we've talked about this before. As hosting is its own skill. You can be the funniest person in the world, but if you're not a good host, then it looks indulgent, then it looks like, you know... And that is one of the things that's in Mr. Ayers' skill set, is that he, you know, does his own stuff, but yet there's such a tremendous respect for the people that come up.
Yeah.
He gives the focus to them, because there's nothing I hate more than you go up there and the host is trying to steal, you know, that. And you see that so often, you know.
Right, right.
But this is... I want to throw the information out here for... can people get tickets ahead of time, or
no,
is it
you just show up.
You just
it's $5 at the door, so all the proceeds go to, you know, the Center for Pacific and Asian Families, which fights sex trafficking, sexual assault, and domestic violence.
Okay. And for more information on this, people can go to dirtylaundrylit.com. That's the website. And I want to bring up some of the names of the people who will be reading there. So, Wayman Ming Jr., Maggie Downs, Emil Barrios, Kathy West, Jesper and Andreessen.
Jesper.
You know, Jesper.
J, yeah.
Jesper.
J is a Y.
It
yeah,
is.
It's Jesper. So you're Jesper. Saying yes
Jesper Andreessen. That is not, that's a name someone made up. Asha.
No, he was in the band Citrus.
Yeah, he is.
Really?
He's like, yeah. He's like the front man.
Oh, man, you can tell
musician
that I am.
Writer.
I am completely. I'm so 15 minutes.
I know.
But Jeff always knows this stuff. He's far more hip than I am. Asha Ankrum.
Ashe Ankrum. But the last one's easy. The last name is easy. Ashe.
Oh, yeah. And Charles Yu.
Yes.
I can handle Charles Yu.
Tell them where it's at. It's at the,
oh, yes.
At the Virgil, which is located at 4519 Santa Monica Boulevard, Los Angeles. And as Natasha said, $5 at the door, and you're in.
And yeah, seven right? At 7:30 p.m., and there's a bar.
7:30 p.m.
$5. You cannot get more entertainment for $5 in this town, I'm telling you. Jeff, are you able to tease anything about what you're going to say, or would you prefer not to?
I would prefer not to at this time.
So serious.
I know. He gets a little touchy about this. No, he doesn't.
Well, because it's I don't want to say that I haven't written it yet, but I've totally written it.
No, you haven't.
Of course I've written it.
It's written in your mind.
Yeah. With my mental pencil, yes.
On his heart.
So, Natasha, any of these, do you ever bring the same readers back? Has anyone done more than one? Have any of these readers done previous Dirty Laundry Lits?
No, this is the first time for all of them. They've never been on our stage. We've had repeats before, like once or twice, but this is the first time any of these have been on our stage.
Are there some people who it's the first time they've read at all publicly?
Yes. So Ashe is 23 years old. This is her first.
I'm sorry, that's Asha. Thank you.
No.
She was in the band Pink Grapefruit, I believe. Is that one?
And she's from Alabama. She's actually flying out.
She
graduated from Pepperdine, flew home to Birmingham, Alabama. So she'll be back tomorrow, just in time for the reading. And this is her first one ever.
Wow.
And Wayman Ming Jr., I don't know how many readings he's done before, but he's a pastor, so he speaks all the time. So this will be new and different.
Okay.
And Emil's is a student who is an excellent speaker. He'll be interesting. And Maggie's a journalist.
Great guy.
All of them. Yeah. Kathy West. Oh, she's flying in from Arizona.
So, coming in for
yeah,
this.
This
is great. And this is like shoulder to, by the way, I should say, wear your comfortable shoes. Because it's shoulder to shoulder in that place.
Yeah.
And you should have you ever been to
no.
the Virgil?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's great. There's a bar that runs the length of the room. It's the same room, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's a bar that runs the length of the room. I got there early last time because I'm elderly. And comparatively, as you can tell by my knowledge of rock bands that Jeff was so nice to correct me on. But I got to sit right at the bar up front. I was very, very lucky and enjoy my martini and
lunch. So not everybody gets to sit?
No, it's not a sitting climate. It's not sort of a sit back and sort of take this in. It's
right.
it's far more energetic than that.
Hey, can I jump in on that too?
Yeah.
You had talked about this before about it not being the atmosphere being like a reading. If any of your listeners are thinking about coming down to check it out, if you've got some notion in your mind of what you think a literary reading series might be like, forget it. Forget it. It's not like that at all. Like you were saying, it's a raucous party. It feels more like a rock concert to me. It feels like. From my perspective, I just have the best seat in the house at the best party in town consistently. So, it's really quite extraordinary.
That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it, yeah. But that's exactly the feeling. It's not. I mean, if there were seats, it wouldn't matter because everyone would be standing.
Yeah.
So, awesome.
You know. But once again, Dirty Laundry Lit. For more information, dirtylaundrylit.com. It is $5 at the door. This is at the Virgil in Los Angeles in the Silver Lake area, if I remember correctly, yes? Mm-hmm.
East Hollywood.
East Hollywood.
Yeah,
uh-huh. East Hollywood.
Yep.
7:30 p.m. This is May 17th, which is this coming Saturday night. I don't have it here. Michael, can you throw that address out there one
yes,
more time
sure.
for us?
Yes, sure. 4519 Santa Monica Boulevard, Los Angeles, 90069 for your GPS. And as Paul said, $5. Yeah.
Mr. Ayres, thank you so much.
Thank
We're
you,
going
Jeff.
To sign
Thanks,
off and
Jeff.
Get to the two ladies we have here in studio with us, but we appreciate you finding time to call in for us.
Paul, Michael, always a pleasure to talk to you guys. Natasha, I'll see you soon, sweetheart.
Okay, love you.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I love you too, Jeff.
He's great. Just love him. Just love him. I'm sorry I can't go. We have a Seaglass production that same night, and I can't attend because I have to...
Been knocking it through the roof, hasn't it?
Six reviews, six love letters. Yeah. We're kicking ass. We're taking names. Ooh. All this about a play about an agoraphobic mortician. Who can't leave the house. It's wonderful. It's a beautiful, beautiful production, and it's kicking
ass.
Yes,
it is, is done at a lovely theater in Pasadena, South Pasadena, the Fremont Center Theater, which actually was a mortuary.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Among other things, the brothel, too.
Yeah. So it was. Do you know
full
that?
Circle.
That's what they told me. Yeah.
Totally.
So it's like life and death and all that, but that's what they told me. Some of the rooms upstairs.
Wow. Of course, those walls could talk.
Yeah. Right?
But thank you for mentioning it. I want you to, if you have time, we do have time, Michael, would you just, you saw a couple of other shows.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we're going to talk to Viva.
Yes.
Here has been waiting so patiently for us.
We were fortunate enough to have recently two of the people connected to two of the co-producers of the premiere of the Australian Theater Company here in Los Angeles, and it is for all of the country. They have come here with an established, there's a huge Australian community that we didn't even know about of actors here, and this company has been established, and they brought with it from Australia a play based on a best-selling book. It is actually one of the 100 favorite Australian books of all time, called Holding the Man, and it was written by Tommy Murphy from the book by Timothy Congreve. And it is basically, the story is this. It is the course of a teenage love that is running smooth, but it is whitewater adventure if you are a gay boy in an all-boys school in 1970s.
An all-gay boys school. So they step right in.
All-boys school. And going back to 1970s, Melbourne, and one of these young men has a crush on the captain of the football team, and despite the odds, they fall in love with one another, and everything starts, and it gets thrown against them with the discrimination and the separations and the temptations and the jealousies and the losses, and the only problem that love can't solve is what threatens to part them. So that being said, it was a time when AIDS was very prevalent in those days and affecting people all over the world, not just gay men. But it brings a story back that, because AIDS today is, it's still a pandemic. I mean, it is still out there. It is still killing these young people. But because of these cocktails, as they say, of, pills that keep it suppressed and keep your immune system in check, people think it's over. And especially those who are participants, sexually active, also think that they are not to be, in harm's way in any sort of way. And that is absolutely not true. And this is a good reminder, this play, of something that it does date back to another time, but it is a very important time in all of our lives, whether you're straight or you're gay or a man or a woman, whatever you are. And I want to say that this company, all Australians doing an Australian piece of material, was so, so beautifully in touch with the play itself. And the play was very, very well written. And it was directed by Larry Moss, who was a very distinguished acting teacher and director. And the cast, you couldn't have cast it better. We had Nate Jones and Nick Hardcastle on our show a couple weeks ago. Those fellows are the producers, but Nate is also the primary star of the show. Mm-hmm. And along with him, opposite him, is Adam Yeend, who plays the captain of the football team and the love interest, and Cameron Datto, who in Australia is a very big celebrity on television. They're a TV host in motion pictures and television series, as is all of this company, and it is definitely a company. Luke O'Sullivan, amazing character actor, young, good-looking kid, but man, he knows how to pull characters together, and he does three or four of them in the show. Adrian Smith and Roxanne Wilson, everybody super, super impressive. And it's a must-see show at the Matrix Theater in the West Hollywood area. And it just opened over this past weekend on the 10th of May, and it will be there through the 29th of June, actually. And it's easy to get tickets.
It's easy to get tickets, but it's hard to get tickets because it's selling really well.
Well, it's selling super well now. But I mean, easy to get tickets in the sense of you simply go to call 323-960-7735. Or go onto their website, which is holdingtheman.us, and obtain tickets that way. But it is riveting, truly riveting, as the second act just kind of, you can hear a pin drop in the second act for the whole, 60 minutes of that thing. So fantastic. And then I close the weekend out by going to the 30th anniversary of the Southland Theater Artists Goodwill event, which is... the explanation for an
acronym. They should have an acronym for that.
They do.
What is it?
Stage.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, stage.
Okay. You see how I work that in?
I'm an artist. And it was Stage Goes to the Movies, and it was in benefit of AIDS Project Los Angeles in their education and research. And on the bill were some rather phenomenal people, such as...
You name them, and I'll tell you if they were on our show.
Well, it was hosted by Robert Osborne, and... No. Rhoda Barrett. Do you remember?
I remember Rhoda Barrett. Yeah, she wasn't
Barrett.
On our show, though.
Rhoda Barrett.
But go on.
No.
I want to see who the cool people are.
They were hosting the show.
Oh, okay.
Mary Wilson.
Mary Wilson has not been. Mary Wilson from The Supremes?
Yes.
Oh.
Holy cow.
She was awesome.
As she would be.
Oh, yeah.
Freaking Supreme. How are you not awesome?
She closed the show. Betty Buckley. Betty Buckley actually closed the show, and she opened the show.
Betty Buckley, we spoke to on the phone. We didn't get her in here, but she has been on the show, hasn't she?
No. No, she
hasn't.
Not.
Not I thought Betty. She had. Okay, keep going. I want
but
to find
Betty opened the show with that fabulous, as if we... from Sunset Boulevard.
As if we never say goodbye.
Yes, actually. Fantastic. She's breathtaking. Debbie Boone.
Debbie Boone?
Debbie
had her
Boone,
on the
my
show.
My friend.
We
no,
had
we
her
did
on the
not
show.
Have
we spoke to her on the phone. We did have her on the show. We've had Debbie Boone on the show.
Really?
We spoke to her on the phone. Yes, we have.
I know Debbie pretty well. I don't remember that.
Keep going.
All right. Of course, she's the daughter of Pat Boone, and she did a fabulous, listen to this, fabulous tribute to her father, Stage Goes the Movies, for State Fair. He was in Pat Boone and State Fair. And her mother-in-law was Rosemary Clooney, because she's married to Rosemary's son, Gabrielle Ferrer, Jose Ferrer's son. And she explained to the audience that Rosemary had taught her the song that she was going to sing, and the dress she was wearing was Rosemary Clooney.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was a very, very special moment for me, because I have had a lifelong relationship with Rosemary. As friends and road manager, et cetera. Carol Cook, the great Carol Cook, was on the bill. Oh, my gosh, this woman killed. David Engel, who is co-starring opposite Leslie Caron right now at the Laguna Beach Playhouse in 6 dance lessons in 6 weeks, and killing them there. Mitzi Gaynor, still as gloriously beautiful as she always was, and in her late 70s,
wow,
early 80s.
Yeah,
And just came out.
Saw a great clip with her on YouTube the other day. There was a thing going around on Facebook with a Mitzi Gaynor production number that was kick-ass.
Barbara Streisand's son, Jason Gould.
Really?
Mm. Yes. Donna McKechnie.
Donna McKechnie we had on the show.
Helen Reddy.
Yeah, Helen Reddy we had on the show.
Yes, Helen we had on the show.
And Donna McKechnie. Don't skip over her.
And Donna. Jake Simpson, who was one of the Star Search winners on the reincarnation of that series that Arsenio Hall hosted. And a plethora of other people. I mean, really, it was such a beautiful evening. And the orchestra, conducted by John McDaniel, was out of sight. Right. So it was a long show, but it was worth every minute.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Sounds good.
They raised a lot of money.
All right. Our next guest, thrilled to be performing again after taking a hiatus to become a mother to the most wonderful baby boy. What is your baby boy's
Henry.
Name?
Henry.
Thank
Sweet
you.
Henry.
Thank you for naming your child a name.
A classic.
Thank you.
Nice, strong
so
name.
Tired of. Oh, I mean, I'm not tired of it, but it's just sort of like, here's my son, Carrot Cake. She can think of no better way to come back to the stage than with 3D theatricals and one of her favorite shows of all time, Into the Woods. She was previously seen there as the mayor in both of 3D theatricals productions of All Shook Up, as well as Irene Malloy in Hello, Dolly. Great role. When not performing, she works in casting and producing television, her latest venture being the Showtime documentary series Time of Death, which aired earlier this year. Portraying the baker's wife in Into the Woods, playing through this weekend, please welcome Viva Carr.
Hello.
Viva.
How are you?
I'm so great. How are you guys?
Good. Yeah. So, you're a favorite show of yours? Have you done it before?
I have done Into the Woods. I did Into the Woods in college, but okay. I've never done The Baker's Wife specifically until now, and it is an absolute dream role. It's like one of the top five. Just have to do it in my life. So
really?
It's really exciting.
Really?
Yeah.
3D
and
theatricals. I'm sorry. Mike, go ahead.
I was going to say the company she's keeping in the show, Jeff Skowron being her husband in the show, who is the...
Oh, that hack.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Hack.
Jeff, are you listening? Yeah, you know, we've had Jeff on the show, and he's an Ovation Award winner as Best Actor in the Musical for Parade at 3D Theatricals.
Oh, right, yes.
Awesome young man, and the two of them together are just sublime, really. It is, and the amazing thing about the show, it's like a Technicolor dream come true. It's like a film. Beautiful.
You don't
at.
Normally send me, Michael sends me the promotional materials for this stuff because he's far more versed in musical theater than I mean, I
right.
enjoy it, but Michael's the encyclopedia about musical theater.
Right.
And you have, usually you send like a press release or something, but you sent pictures to me this time. And
I did.
My first thought was, this is going to help us on the radio. But I see why you sent them. They're absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
I mean, just, and when they look that good just in the publicity still, you know, it's
yeah.
pretty spectacular.
The design of the show is out of this world.
Yes.
I wish I could watch it, actually,
yeah.
because I, too, have only really seen how beautiful it is from those photos. I'm up on stage and you don't
right.
get a sense.
Right.
But the set design, the lighting, it's just gorgeous. Just gorgeous.
And you've done...
And the costumes.
And the
too.
Costumes are the original Broadway costumes.
Yes.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
How'd
so,
you get those?
TJ Dawson, producer extraordinaire. He got his hands on those bad boys.
Because you
got to
watch those New York costumes because they can have live rats in them.
I've heard.
That's the discussion we had before.
I have heard.
You'll have to listen to our archives to understand the reference for
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
So, but this is how many shows at 3D for you?
This is my fourth.
Wow.
This is my fourth. So TJ Dawson and I actually go back a million years, one of the founders of 3D Theatricals. We did a show at The Matrix as well,
mm-hmm.
Anyone Can Whistle, directed by Michael Michetti a million years ago. I want to say it was like 2001. It was a remount of Sondheim's Anyone Can Whistle. So TJ and I have known each other forever. And I sort of got on board with the company the very first year that they started, the first season that they hit the ground running.
Wow.
All Shook Up was the second show, I believe. So.
It's just everyone who talks about it. I mean, it would make sense. It's a familial environment because it's siblings that run it.
It
right?
is three siblings.
Yeah.
TJ, Daniel, and Gretchen. That's why
right.
it's called 3D.
Wow.
They're siblings and they have an immense love and passion for theater and they're incredibly good at what they do.
Yes, they
so.
Are. And TJ's wife, Jeanette Dawson, is also a wonderful singer actress who plays Cinderella in this production.
Really?
Yes, she does.
Yeah. And she also kind of produces on the side with the three siblings. But boy, she gave an entirely different meaning to that role,
yes.
Cinderella. Not like you would think it would be.
And I think that's what TJ was so attracted to,
yes.
was knowing that she was not what you're sort of used to seeing in that role. And he had such faith that she could bring something incredibly unique to it, which she does.
Oh,
which is
absolutely.
Awesome.
Well,
yeah.
you know, Michael, I was supposed to do that role.
Oh, you
really?
Right.
You
weren't available, right?
No, I had a conflict.
What was that, Paul?
I can't sing or dance.
Oh.
Anyway, my side. but now, if I remember correctly, is 3D Theatricals a group that they do like a mini tour? They go from one location to another?
They do, from Fullerton? Plumber Auditorium to the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Unfortunately, this show is not going to Redondo because of a pre-existing contract during this time period at Redondo that had been signed by the city. So,
but they do these spectacular productions, and they're only like what, 2-3 weeks?
Three.
Yeah.
I know three.
Three,
and then usually when it can go to Redondo, then it's another two. But it is such a shame because it's massive and huge and amazing, and the talent that they attract is so incredible. And I wish we could run forever.
And let's just mention some of that talent. Bets Malone.
Yeah.
Bets has
oh,
been on.
We had
show
her
before.
On the show. I don't know why that's so important. The only people who have any creative value are people who are
as the witch, and David Alan Jones as the narrator throughout the show, who does a lovely job.
Mm-hmm.
Jeanette Dawson, we dismembered, named as Cinderella.
We dismembered her?
I know. Well, that's unfortunate. Sorry about that, Jeanette.
Jordan Lamoureux, the amazing Jordan Lamoureux, and his amazing family, talented so with his mom in the orchestra pit, conducting a 15-piece glorious orchestra and the score.
Music.
Yeah. And Julia Morgan Taylor as Little Red Riding Hood, who was so awesome. Tracy Mutz, is that how you say it?
Yep.
Mutz as Jack's mother. Tim Martin Gleason, our friend.
Yes.
Paul.
Also on the show.
He plays Cinderella's prince, and we first worked together when he played Walt Disney in the When You Wish musical that was done this past year. And from LA's Next Great Stage Show, which I produce every year, Cameron Zemke as Rapunzel's prince.
They're just out there. Those kids that are, you know, how many now are on Broadway?
I'll tell you. I just got word the other day that our ninth contestant will be, I can't even say the name because the contracts are just being signed.
Wow.
But he is going into the Book of Mormon.
Wow.
Yeah, fabulous.
Michael does this thing called the LA's Next Great Stage Star for young people, and it's just like this now, like training ground.
Eight years, and these kids kind of walk in as amateurs, and they walk out with agents in their arms and a career.
Fantastic. Yeah.
It's phenomenal. Like, boom, nine of them by next month, will have made their Broadway debut in the last 8 years.
Amazing. What is it called again?
LA's Next Great Stage Star. But we're here to talk about Viva and her wonderful...
As I said, I want to put the location out there, how people can get tickets. This is at the Plummer Auditorium. It's 201 East Chapman Avenue in Fullerton, California. And you can call the box office, 714-589-2770. That's 714-589-2770, extension 1. Or you can always use the interweb, as the kids are using these days. 3DTShows.com. 3DTShows. And group and student discounts are available, and it's just through this weekend. So be sure to catch it. This is Sundays at 2, and Thursday tonight at 8, and Fridays and Saturdays at 8. And is there a matinee?
There's a matinee on Saturday.
Oh, okay. So there's a matinee too.
And it closes with a matinee on Sunday.
Correct.
Well, that's a long day.
Yeah.
You had to get used to that. She's probably used to that,
exactly.
Doing 8 shows a week. But let's talk about your career. How did you get started in this? What made you think that this was what you should be doing?
I was an actor for many, many years. I'm from Chicago originally, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So
I knew my wife from Chicago.
Whereabouts?
Foster and Western.
I'm not from the city. I'm lying when I say that. I'm from a suburb of like the Joliet area.
Joliet
region. Right. Yeah. It was something I fell in love with. The classic story, you know, sort of in high school and did it and came out here and worked professionally for many, many years. And then sort of took the last couple of years and did some other things and explored some other creative ventures. And now I'm back and I'm ready to get back on stage and be doing it all again, which is exciting.
So, it's an unusual mix though, because
an incredibly natural sort of changeover for me. I had a friend that was in casting, and he said, "You'd be great at this." And I was like, no, I'm fine. I have no interest. And he's like, "Just try it once. Come do one show with me." Cut to, fell in love. It was something that I was just very naturally good at. And I think being on the stage gives you such an education in story and character. And so for me, it really makes sense to be on the other side and be able to see how the story will play out and how to create these characters in these worlds.
Oh, sure.
So it was a really natural switch for me, and it was a great different creative muscle to stretch. And I've always been somebody that was correct for The Baker's Wife. And when I say that, I mean even when I was 20. You know what I mean? So for me, I sort of had to take some time to age into everything that I've always been really appropriate for role-wise, which is why now it makes sense for me to sort of reignite the career and get back on stage and be doing this again.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of my 20s understudying some phenomenal people, but I just wasn't old enough to, you know, be nailing the roles that I'm technically always been right for.
And that's such a big factor for performers aging up into. I've found that for myself too. Mm-hmm. Just that it's a completely different market that one ages up into, and if you stay in the game long enough, it can do well for you.
Absolutely.
You know, you just made me think of somebody that I didn't mention in stage, but along to what you're saying.
Gary Oldman. I remind you of Gary Oldman.
No.
Oh, that was just me. Did I say that out loud or think it?
You did. It just came right out. Richard Chamberlain was on the
show. Oh,
that's
amazing.
What I was trying to get to,
Richard,
because we've had him on the show.
Amazing.
He came here, thought he was going to, yeah, he was a wonderful man.
He was so elegant, and he is 80-something, and he sang to beat the bejesus, and he sang for My Fair Lady, which he has done on the road. He's done the play, and he had two beautiful women dancing with him, and he danced in the middle of the number.
Fantastic.
I've always thought he was the best Liza.
Wow. It was Henry Higgins.
So, favorite roles, aside from this?
That I've played or that I wish to play?
No, that you've played.
What are some other favorite roles that I've played? Well, honestly, the mayor in All Shook Up. It's such a sort of silly, fun entertainment. You know, it's one of those pieces that is just sort of pure fluff and wonderful
that
in that way. It's a Elvis Presley jukebox musical.
Oh, okay.
So it's
okay,
all
yeah.
Elvis Presley music. Yeah. But she's sort of delicious and funny, and I got to just really play with her. And TJ gave me so much freedom to just drop one-liners and improv and, you know, just have a ball with this woman that sweeps on stage and is gone and you don't see her again.
Not saddled with narrative
exactly,
or anything.
Exactly. You know, yeah. So those sort of fun, really character-y type roles I love doing.
Yeah.
You know, sort of the Megan Mullally type roles of the world is something that I fits me like a glove. So I have fun with those.
I call those the over-the-newspaper roles because everyone else is working really hard and then you just drop the newspaper and just throw this zinger out. I had a role like that in Laughter on the 23rd Floor in Chicago when I did the Briar Street, and I played with Ron Orbach.
Yes.
And I played Kenny, and Kenny was basically the young Larry Gelbart character from Mel Brooks or from Sid Caesar days.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else is running around, working up a sweat, and I'm drinking tea and just drop the laugh line and then go back to what I'm doing. It was glorious.
And it's so fun,
yeah, it's
right?
Great. It's great.
The best.
Yeah. Really enjoyable. Really enjoyable.
Do you have any aspirations to direct?
I do.
Yeah.
I do, absolutely.
Musicals,
yeah. Really any theater. I have such a deep love for straight theater as well. But I do have, having been sort of on the side of casting now and producing, and I definitely that's the next step, I think, for me, is to get on the other side and,
you know, that actually
start directing.
That actually makes me think about something. Natasha, I wanted to ask you about this, and the directing question made me think of this. Have you ever thought, Dirty Laundry Lit is so theatrical, mm-hmm. even though it's, have you ever thought about broadening it and actually doing it as some sort of, like with lighting and with music? I mean, there is music, obviously, mm-hmm. but I mean, embroidering it enough to be like a full theater piece? Has that ever been
on your... I would love to do something like that. If there was, you know, if something felt right, because everything seems like every suggestion that people have made when we sort of tried it out, you know, when it's just not quite right or it loses a part of what it is, you know, the things that people love about it,
the energy. Okay.
So I'm not sure yet how to transform it into something that, you know, that moves as smoothly, mm-hmm. you know, in mm-hmm. a stage.
No, it would just work
very
well.
But I'm totally open to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just occurred to me that it would be a great thing.
Question.
Direction. Yeah. It's that time, Michael.
I know.
It's a time
we have to baptize
our.
What does that mean? I'm so scared.
I told you. This is when we ask you to share tales of things gone wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know how many Natasha's going to have given her limited performance history, but just things that went south in performance, embarrassing, whatever. No, hopefully
right.
no injury.
Well, we had something happen last week that was sort of gave me a chuckle. Although I didn't see it happen, you know, in Into the Woods there are birds that make an appearance quite frequently. And Jeff and I have a really lovely, wonderful, beautiful duet together that is such a touching moment in the show. And I'll be darned if a bird didn't just come falling from the ceiling while we were doing our duet. So this is theater. These are just one escaped from whatever he was hanging on and decided to drop to the stage while we were doing our number. It's fine.
Okay.
Totally fine.
Okay. Yes.
He wasn't alive, if that's what you're worried about.
Okay.
fake birds. But I don't know. I think one of the sort of most insane things that's ever happened is I was doing a production of Hello Dolly, not the 3D theatricals production, I should mention. But the audience itself was raked, so it was on an angle, sort of an incline down to the stage, and we're all in the courtroom scene, which, if you know, Hello Dolly, most of the cast is on stage, and we're facing the audience, and all of a sudden we hear sort of this like clank, and then we hear this like like this sort of squeaking happening, and we're trying to not pay attention, and some poor woman's wheelchair brake had given, and she was barreling towards barreling towards the stage. It was so unbelievable.
It's huge with the disabled. Exactly. We had them in the aisle.
She was such a good sport, but it was, I felt so sad for her. She just crashed right into the, not into the pit, it was a raised pit, but she just, the pit was raised. Yeah. Thank gosh, the pit was raised.
Wow. And,
theater, you never know, people. You never
Jeff,
know.
Jeff Ayers and I did a production of Macbeth in college that I was woefully unprepared to play of Macbeth, 21 years old, and just playing. But in one of the scenes, one of the dead soldiers from the previous scene fell asleep, and then the next scene happened, and it's just me and Lady Macbeth and a dead guy.
Fantastic.
In our home, in our parlor, as it were. We just had to improv a line and get this man removed. And sort of improvise an iambic pentameter. But just fell asleep, just right there.
That
you know what Viva just said about the lady in the wheelchair and heading toward the pit. I was representing a national tour of a show called Festival on Ice, which played only in theaters. So they would go in and they would create the rink on the stage, which would be about 40 by 60 as an average theater stage. And seeing an ice skating production that, you know, in such close proximity is very different than seeing it in a big arena. Very exciting because they do the same things. They do the same, you know, spirals and the lifts and all of it. And at the end of the show, the closing number was I Had the Time of My Life, that pop song.
Mm-hmm.
Big, big, big closing number, big orchestra thing happening, and a beautiful staged curtain call with all of the cast, you know, moving forward like a chorus line would. Moving forward, skating forward to their final bow. And one fella just kept skating just a little bit further. Boom! Into the pit.
Oh.
And you see him crawling up. And back onto the stage and standing up and taking a bow.
At the time of
and scene.
Yes.
I've had to skate on stage. It's the most terrifying thing in the entire universe.
Yeah. Natasha, you're going to have to tell us next time because we're out of time.
All right, so that's unfortunately, good.
Oh my gosh, we didn't get to Natasha.
But you got me last time, though.
Okay.
You got me last time.
What a pleasure to have both of you.
Thank you.
Awesomeness.
Let's throw the information out there once again. Dirty Laundry Lit this weekend, this Saturday night, 7:30 at the Virgil in Los Angeles. All the info is at dirtylaundrylit.com.
And Into the Woods at Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton through 18th of May. That is this weekend, folks. Performance tonight, Friday night, two shows on Saturday and a matinee on Sunday. 3D Theatricals. Go to their website or call 714-589-2770.
And thank you not only to these ladies, but also to Jeff Ayers, who joined us earlier in the hour. We're grateful to have him on. And what a pleasure.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
See you on the radio, Paul.
See you next week.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.